From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk like we did 40 years ago. 1985 might not seem like the distant past, but people had some pretty different ideas about how to talk properly. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, New York Times bestselling authors and language experts Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy Petras at your home in Armilla. Hello, Ross. You are there at your home in Toronto. And today we are going to fire up the flux capacitor because we are going back to 1985, the year Back to the Future took place. Now, please don't write in because I don't actually remember if you like fire up the flux capacitor or how that technically works. But I do know that 1985 is when we went back to the future.
Very good. But we're going to start with something different. As always, we're going to clean things up, Ross.
Yes. We might cleanse them up, Kathy.
We got an email from a listener. I believe his name was Jefferson, but I could be wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'm very sorry. Who wrote, and I did love this email, so I'm going to read the whole thing. I cringe whenever I hear the word cleanse, if clean would have done perfectly well. What is it that they're really trying to convey here? Do you get cleaner by cleansing instead of cleaning? And what of a cleanser? Is a cleanser not just a fancy cleaner? The rabbit hole gets deeper when they start throwing around cleanly or cleanly. Does living a cleanly life come from cleansing or from cleaning? Is cleanliness the result of living a cleanly life, or is it just being clean enough? Help!
This one really got to us because the interesting thing is cleanse is the older word. Cleanse was used far more frequently than clean initially, and clean wasn't even used. Clean popped up in the 15th century, in the 1400s, then quickly pushed cleanse out of the picture. So it's actually kind of interesting to see that. But then Kat and I were talking, part of we think why people use cleanse is it sounds fancier. Mm-hmm. But there are usages of cleanse that I think you would use and you wouldn't use clean, like you cleanse like your soul or
right.
something like that in a religious sense.
Yeah, I would use it metaphorically, right? Yeah, I cleanse my soul or I don't know, cleanse the house of evil spirits or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't say I cleaned my soul.
Right.
Okay?
No.
It just sounds like dusted.
Give it a good washing.
Yeah, and the other day when I was cleaning a house of evil spirits, I did say cleanse.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you said that you think people say it now to sound fancy. I don't really hear. Do people say it now in a non-metaphorical way?
Oh yeah, cleanse. Though I think it's like it's used a lot in ad copy. I always notice
yes.
that
okay.
where it's like face stuff. You know, cleanser. Well,
cleanser
to begin
cleanser,
with.
You say yeah.
facial
you don't
cleanser,
say cleaner,
but you
yeah.
also say cleanse your face of impurities. You don't say clean
yeah.
your face of impurities.
Well, you know
you?
What though? It seems. So clean, maybe this is a reflection on how not well I clean things, but it seems like if you said clean your face, that would be like a surface level thing. Like I wash it mm-hmm. with soap and water, but if I cleanse mm-hmm. it, then I'm getting something deep down into the pores. Like it's a lot deeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're really
Fletcher. You should start doing ad copy for skincare products. I completely agree with you. Cleanse to me has like an intensifier to me. I think it's an intensifier.
Yeah.
You're really cleaning it.
Yeah.
It's cleanse to me.
Can you cleanse a lens? No, I'm thinking of my contacts. You don't say I'm cleansing my lenses. Although I
no.
like how it sounds.
I don't think I would say that I was cleansing anything in my house. Like even a deep
no.
clean. Even a deep clean, I don't think I would refer to as a cleanse. My body is different.
Yeah,
yeah.
If there's pores involved.
Pores
somehow,
are the key.
You know what I
exactly.
mean?
But that does lead to what we were talking about, we're going to be talking about today, which are usages of words or grammatical usages. Are these now, I mean, these distinctions, should we make them or not? And as Fletcher said in 19, I'm going to read, here's the book, Harper Dictionary of Contemporary Usage. This was published in 1985, and it had internationally known authorities on word and language. And it was the state of the language today they were talking about, including piercing, perceptive, and witty comments from a distinguished panel of language experts.
Ross, it sounds like us, but now.
But there are 166 of them, outstanding writers, editors, news broadcasters, and others concerned with our language and how we use it, from Jane Alexander and Isaac Asimov to Barbara Tuchman and William Zinsser. And what they did was they had a panel in many cases where they would say, is this acceptable or is this unacceptable? And these were words in common usages or grammatical structures, syntax, etc. Should people be saying this or should they not be saying it? And they had votes. And we're going to talk about the vote here.
So how much has changed in 40 years?
Right.
And do we agree or disagree?
Yes, exactly.
Should we start with this one, Ross?
Yeah, why not?
This is one we actually have talked about in the past. Disinterested versus uninterested. The panel was asked, do you observe the distinction? I.e., can you use them interchangeably? Harper Usage Panel said, written, yes, 91%, you can. No, 9%. Oh, yes, they did observe the distinction. Excuse me. 91% of them, no, 9%. In casual speech, very similar. 90%, yes, 10%, no. So when they asked if they would distinguish the meaning between disinterested and uninterested, they said, yes, okay. We do. And Asimov said, I'm very proud of knowing the distinction and insist on it, correcting others freely. Anthony Burgess, as in A Clockwork Orange, said, this is one of the worst of all American solecisms, and it makes me boil. What do you think?
What do you think, Fletcher? Are you boiling here or not?
Which side of it was Burgess on?
They're both on the side of making a distinction between the two.
Okay.
You do not use them interchangeably.
Basically, disinterested meaning you don't have any bias. Uninterested is you don't want to think about it.
Right. And that is what they would mean. Yeah, like a judge is supposed to be disinterested.
Right.
But if you're
certainly not uninterested. We want the judge to be interested.
Exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think it's funny that Asimov said, "I'm very proud of knowing the difference." And mm-hmm. I correct people freely. If he's so proud of knowing the difference, then he recognizes that it's not necessarily, I mean, it's not a common thing to know the difference. And he's sort of admitting that he is not very accepting of people who simply are ignorant of it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems like kind of a jerk thing to do.
I'm with you, and I usually like Asimov, but on this one, I'm again.
Yeah. I'm not trying to say anything bad about Asimov beyond that. I just think, you know, if you acknowledge that, then, you know, maybe be a little more accepting. I do kind of agree with them on the written version of it.
It's interesting, though, because the Oxford English Corpus found that 25% of all citations did not observe that distinction. These are written citations. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I do agree with you. I like that distinction. But that distinction is very much fading, as we can see, 25% now, and it's becoming more and more common.
Well, what interests me, though, no pun intended, what interests me is that in the past they coexisted as meaning the same thing in the farther back past. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to talk about writers, John Donne, the poet, who was a pretty learned guy, used disinterested in the newfangled way to mean uninterested.
That's really interesting, too, because the prefix dis and un would actually, Kathy, that would actually go with what you just said. Because dis usually means a reversal or taking away the state or the action. So disinterested by the normal usage of dis would mean you're taking away your former interest. Un means you have no interest in it whatsoever, which is okay. So it sort of makes sense that it would be originally the reverse.
Yeah, I disagree with both Asimov and Burgess, and I actually like their books, but I'm sorry, guys, you're both dead, so it doesn't matter, but I disagree with you.
That's funny, because they're both dead, and I completely agree with them, which is not a good sign. I think I'm not going to correct someone like Asimov apparently does, but I think that the distinction is pretty important. I think it's a nice distinction. A disinterested individual, I think... You know, the judge is disinterested in the case. I think that's a nice word for a nice sort
of. Why can't you just say not biased? I disagree with you.
Because bias bias is sort of a negative, is negative in a way. Bias to me has a slightly negative connotation, like you're not against this person for this reason. Whereas disinterested to me means like you're completely fair. And I mean, maybe I'm disinterested in the outcome of something where I don't really have any opinion on it. And I don't really like, of course I'm not biased, but bias has a negative tone to me. What do you think, Fletcher? Do you agree with that, what I'm saying, or not?
I'm wondering if we're talking about slightly different definitions of the word interest more than anything else. If we say that the judge is disinterested, we're saying the judge does not have an interest, meaning a stake on either side.
Right.
Whereas if I say I'm uninterested, that means I don't find this thing interesting.
Right, exactly.
So I'm wondering if we're actually kind of talking about slightly different interests. It seems like we're worrying about the prefix, but maybe these two words are using different definitions of interest.
And that's a really good point.
I also like disinterested, but I also think it's kind of passed us by. If we say disinterested or even write disinterested, a lot of people are going to read it as uninterested. I'm not sure that we're going to get the idea across that we want to get across.
That is the best point of all. I agree.
And as a modern woman, I would just like to say,
I think we have to accept it.
Yeah,
I think we do. I'm not going to fight it. I agree with you. I still like the old usage, and I'm lamenting the change in that old usage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The next word I'm not lamenting. Okay, we have careen versus career.
Oh, funny.
And this is in the sense of the car careened down the street. Okay, the usage panel, 87%, said this is okay. I'm inclined to agree. What about you, Fletcher?
They said it's okay to say careen.
Yes, it should be career.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it's okay to do that. But I have more things to say about that.
Go, Fletcher, go.
Okay, we may have talked about this before, but is it the case that careen is more American and career is more British?
I believe, wasn't that the case? I think that you're right. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at career. Okay, I'm finding all my examples of career in the OED are British. Careen. Chiefly U.S.
Okay.
Chiefly U.S. Yes.
So I happen to notice this word when it comes up in movies or TV.
Yep.
I was watching a British TV show. I think it was We Are Lady Parts. Great show. The young woman in it's about a Muslim punk rock group. The young woman in the show said something was careering down the hall or something like that, right? But the subtitles that we had on so that we could understand everybody said careen.
That's really interesting. I wonder if an American did the subtitles.
Exactly. That's exactly what I think.
And Fletcher, it's so coincidental, but last night I was watching an episode of Poirot. And he talked about careering down a road.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, wow, career. Here we go again. Because I know career is technically the original, but I would always say careen. I don't think I've ever said careering.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you, Ross, because I actually have heard you say career, and I've always, and it was when you were in the middle of, I think, an Aggie phase or something. You have used the term, and I was always like, my ears went like, tinkle, tinkle, woo.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, no,
that is,
totally.
I don't recall this, so that's interesting.
Yeah, because I thought, God, Ross is becoming such a freaking Brit here. Come on, really, well, no.
I guess I went to the bubbler and had a little,
One more thing to say about movies. Would you agree that probably if somebody was kind of a snooty pedant, they would probably say career, like as a point?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Exactly.
So have you seen the movie The Holdovers with Paul Giamatti?
No.
Okay. So he plays a private school instructor, and he's very I know all of these things, I know words, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point during the movie when he yelled at a kid about careening down the hall. And I instantly thought they missed that. He would have said, that guy would have said career.
No question about that. No question about that.
That was the one thing about the movie that made me bad. Otherwise, great movie. But
that's it. But I totally agree, because I think that career, an American would say the career as a,
It would be pedantly. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Which is why I took exception to Ross.
I actually, that's so interesting, because when we did this, I thought, I would have sworn I'd never said career in my life. It's so interesting, except as a career, you know, whatever. But, right. But the noun.
Well, I don't think he would say my Kareen is.
My Kareen is not Greek. Yeah. I also didn't know the original word of Kareen was to turn a ship on its side for cleaning or to move in an uncontrolled way. It's tilting on the side. I didn't realize that at all.
We have so many words in English that come from ships.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, we forget. Well, they were important.
Yep. And from French, here we're coming up to another word for French.
Chaise lounge versus chaise longue.
Right. No, that was pretty good.
I can't pronounce the second
very nice
one.
Nice guy.
That wasn't bad. So we know that this is spelled chaise longue, L-O-N-G-U-E, right?
Right.
Correct.
But we all say chaise lounge. What did they say?
In writing. Is this okay in writing? Chaise lounge versus longue.
Oh.
They said, yes, said 9%, you can use lounge. No, said 91%.
Yeah.
Okay. In speech, yes, you can say chaise lounge was 12%.
Oh, wow.
No was 88%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think it's clear that you should write it correctly. I mean, that's the name of the thing. But saying chaise longue now would be weird.
I completely agree with you. And it's interesting. There was a comment made by a grammarian. It's chaise lounge or chaise longue is kind of stuck in an intermediate stage of development because we have the first French word and we're okay with chaise. We all agree. But the second word, and I thought it was interesting when Kathy sort of half jokingly, but kind of really had a little bit of difficulty with longue, you know? And I think that's a very real, I mean, she really illustrated to all of us the real problem with chaise longue. And I completely agree with you guys. I would never, I mean, chaise longue sounds really, talk about careening down or careering down with a chaise longue. It's just like too much.
Yeah.
I'm fine with chaise lounge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm astounded that back in 1985, 88% said you can't even say that. I mean, come on.
Yeah, really?
Come on. The problem is, though, is the long, I mean, it means long couch. It doesn't mean a lounge, a chair lounge. But, I mean, we all think of it as stuff. I don't know.
But if you look at the etymology, even apparently long and lounge, I mean, lounge may have a similar etymology to long anyway. So, I mean, you know.
Long.
I wouldn't worry about it. I really don't think this is a worry. And now we have an interesting word here. This didn't have a survey on it, but they hated it. Comment versus commentate. And I'm going to read what they said.
Oh.
They said commentate is a back formation of commentator. It's often heard in formulations like, Nancy Weston will commentate the new fall fashion show. This is an item from the jargon of the cloak and suit trade and should remain there. There is one worse abomination, though. We have noticed occasions where a brace of commentators were reported as about to co-commentate a showing.
Co-commentate? I both hate commentate and recognize that it actually has utility.
What's the utility for versus comment?
Well, because if you're just commenting on something, then you could just be, well, making comments about it. If you're commentating, you're in an official capacity telling us on the air about something, you know, while it's going on.
Interesting, though, because the thing for me is commentate is mainly British.
Yeah.
I still stick at it when I hear commentate.
Oh, yeah.
I really do.
I like I said, I don't like it. Like, it sounds really gross to me. I don't like it, but I get it.
It sounds gross, but I think, Fletcher, your point is it's a really useful word in that sense. Because I hear Eurosport hard enough to comment, I get it slightly like, yeah, I really like the Australian Open. I don't get that idea of like actually doing work on it. So I think that's a good idea. But it still sticks in my craw. I'm still not happy about it. I think it may be necessary.
Yeah.
This is a pet peeve of mine, Orient versus
Orientate.
I was just going to say that one.
Kathy, when you said commentate was British, was chiefly British, I reacted very quickly because of Orientate. Because I, you know, being whatever I am, railed against Orientate for a long time. And I still hate it, but I learned that it's pretty common in British English.
Yeah, I have the same thing. My friend was always saying something about orientate, and I always thought, I thought you were smart. You used to be a teacher.
Right.
You know? I was like, what are you doing? And she's a Brit, and orientate is the norm there. You don't say, or like orientation, I get, but saying I've got to orientate myself, it's like, no, mm-hmm. you know?
But while commentate does have, as Fletcher pointed out, like a decent usage with it, orientate doesn't.
Yep.
And I have to accept orientate because, you know, the British who basically invented our language use it. So, okay, but...
Yeah, but we improved it, Ross. We
I don't like it. Yes, we have. And I do... That's one word I do not like. I do not use it. I would not write it. I'm not going to correct anyone. I'm not going to argue with it, but I'm never going to write it.
The next one, this is an interesting one because Ross and I had a little, not argument, but a little debate about it. Badly, as in meaning a lot. As in, the Democratic Party is badly in need of new leadership.
Mm.
Can I interrupt you for one second? That was from 1985. Then
times
a couple
haven't
of days
changed.
Ago, we got a quote from the Financial Times 2025. The Democrats are badly in need of a messiah.
Oh, I thought
that was like
Ross.
The worst
brilliant.
Comment. Of, you know, that really got me.
Anywho, our panel from 1985... Yes. Now I'm getting confused, Ross. It's yes, bad. You shouldn't do it, right?
No, you can do it. 77% said you can say badly as in a lot.
Oh, okay. And 23% said no, you cannot.
Okay. I didn't even know this was controversial.
That was my feeling, too.
I hate it.
Really?
That was the interesting thing.
Yeah, I don't really like it. Yeah, I don't. I don't really care for it.
Fletcher, that's why we included it. Kathy, I thought maybe we should just, you know, forget this one because no one thinks that. And Kathy is among that 23%.
Why, Kathy?
My guess would be it's a 1% now. My guess, Kathy, is you're alone.
I mean, I need it badly. I need it a lot. I have no problem with a lot. The badly, I have actually, though, in fairness to me, and it sounds a little nutty, I have an issue a lot of times with adverbs, with the L-Y's, like goodly or firstly, secondly, all that stuff. I just have a thing against
it. Yeah,
it
must be that.
What if I said, I need it bad?
Well, that would really bother me.
Now it's not even an adverb.
I mean, I'd allow you to say it, but I would not be happy with you.
But see, that's what bothers me, because I need some chocolate badly. You wouldn't mind. I need it badly.
Technically, I understand it, but I'd rather you say I need some chocolate. I really need some chocolate.
So I need some chocolate bad? That wouldn't like...
That's bad.
You think that's... All right. That's fair.
That wouldn't work for me either.
That doesn't bother me.
Either.
Neither one of those bothers me.
That doesn't bother me. I mean, it doesn't bother me either, but it's technically not correct.
Well, it's technically not, but...
This is an interesting one, too. This one I thought was... We thought this was completely... Well, let me just say it. Cope. But you're basically coping. You're not coping with something. You're just coping.
Oh, uh-huh.
Coping is intransitive. Okay?
Okay.
Yes, this was interesting because most people, 70% said you should never do this in writing. Huh. They said it was okay. 62% it was okay in speech. But even there, almost, you know, 38% said no. Fletcher, what do you think? I have no problem with this.
Not remotely. No.
But, no.
So I wonder if just our attitude toward mental health has changed that. I mean, now when we're coping, we're kind of managing with the larger sense of things, you know, like mm-hmm. with the whole world. Like, I don't need to say I'm coping with everything that's going on in the world. You can just say I'm coping. But maybe 40 years ago, we weren't quite as... We didn't care quite
panicky.
As much about, well, yeah. No, I'm sure we were, but like we weren't necessarily as willing to talk about, you know, our mental well-being.
That's an interesting point. I think that's a valid one. I'm just looking right now, the OED, it had it had been used, golly, from the 1300s.
Yeah.
But it meant to strike, to come to blows, to meet in battle.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah. I never knew that.
So you can't cope. You can't meet something in battle. You can't meet your faults in battle or your fears in battle, maybe.
Yeah. No, I had no idea about that.
The one thing I do wonder about, though, Fletcher, was like 50 years ago, everyone was talking about neuroses and stuff. So I'm not really sure the idea.
Yeah, but did we really mean it? I mean, that was more of like a clinical being removed from things look at neuroses. I mean, like...
Maybe.
I say that. It's not completely true. you know, Carl Rogers was around too, so.
Yeah, who knows? Well, I'm going to critique this, Fletcher. Kath, you want to?
Very nice, Ross. It's critique versus criticism, i.e., is critique okay, as in a transitive verb, as in he critiqued that film.
Oh, so we are talking about it as a verb, not as a noun. Okay.
Noun, right.
Not as a noun. The Harper panel said in writing, no, 93%. No, no, no. You do not critique something. And in casual speak, no, 87%.
What would you say instead?
Criticized.
Right. And that doesn't sound right at all now, if what you're talking about.
I completely agree.
We both agree.
Yeah.
Completely agree. I think there is a completely necessary word,
yeah.
I think. And the old idea of criticism, though, was not, we take it, criticism is negative now.
Mm-hmm.
But, and a film critic is not necessarily, you can see where it still kind of remains the same. A film critic does not mean the film critic is going to always be against a film.
Right.
So therefore, why can't he criticize a film? Because that's what critics do.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea now is I'm criticizing you, Fletcher, has a negative term to it.
That's right.
I'm critiquing your radio show has a positive or a disinterested
neutral
term.
I think. Yeah, disinterested. Very nice, Ross.
Yes.
Or I would say unbiased.
Or maybe impartial. But I think there's a definite.
Yeah, I think things have definitely changed enough that you need.
Yeah, because I need that word. I don't think of criticize as impartial at all. Mm-mm. Anymore.
Nope.
I understand. Mm-mm. It technically isn't, but it's a negative. I agree.
You know what? Critic is even used negatively, though. I mean, if we're talking about a film critic, obviously that's like a job title.
Right.
But, you know, I'm reading news copy and they'll talk about supporters of the bill, blah, blah, blah. Critics of the bill, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Right. And so
that's a good point.
Yeah, that word is definitely used negatively.
I think so. I think you're absolutely right. Unless it's a job title, it is like it's the implication is negative.
Yep.
You don't say, as a critic of this, I find it wonderful.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. You don't. But I like the idea of someone's put a sentence, a critic can write a critique that may be full of criticism. I think that gives you a real.
Yeah. I love that. But Ross, I don't want you to demean yourself.
Now that is interesting.
Oh.
Demean, we know what we usually use demean to mean.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an older usage which meant to conduct or behave oneself, usually in a proper manner.
Oh,
they
wow.
They have an example from Henry James. He might have been observed to demean himself as a person with nothing to do.
Oh my gosh.
Is the positive sense of this word obsolete?
This was fascinating. Kath, give them the percentage of people who thought no in 1985.
31% thought absolutely not. The positive sense is not obsolete.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I know, right?
I would never use it in the positive sense.
I would never. This may be the first time I've known this was even a thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, here's a sentence from, I guess, you know, a while back. They did not know how to demean themselves in the king's presence. They don't mean grovel. They mean
conduct themselves in a good way. Would have thought they meant like they didn't know how to prostrate themselves.
Yes.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah, I would have too.
And thank you for saying prostrate as opposed to prostate.
Oh, I hate that.
I do know the difference there.
But it comes from the French, de mener, you know, which is to conduct, which is, I mean, it's clearly originally, you know, what we thought, just to conduct oneself properly.
How did the meaning change? Do you have any idea?
No.
Yeah.
Don't. That one is really interesting. We did some research on it. We couldn't find
it. I'm looking. Is it that there are two different demeans?
No, the feeling, actually, Kath, can I interrupt you here? Because the feeling is it's modeled on debase.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so they had the D part means going down. So you're going down in your conduct is what how it became.
That's what I'm saying. So there are in effect two demeans in English. One which is the going down one, and the other which is just to conduct. No, I'm confused here.
No, demean originally meant what we thought it meant. The D part did not mean down in that sense. It just came from the French demeaner, which had a certain meaning. Then apparently what happened was people kept using the duh as
Negative.
Negative. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. duh usually means, it comes from the Latin, it usually means down, but it can also mean concerning. So my guess mm-hmm. would be the concerning conduct would have been the original meaning of it in English. And then on the model of debase, it took over that prefix became the down.
Yeah, because I'm looking at everything in the OED initially is just conducting. Yeah. It's just like conducting things.
Yeah, conducting. Duh, conduct.
Conduct.
But then on the model of debase, it came to mean down conduct, which means groveling or whatever, which is really cool.
Yeah, fascinating.
It's very interesting. I'm interested in rack and rack. This is something that I always get caught on. Okay. Pain racked or storm racked, the W-R-A-C-K versus R-A-C-K.
Right.
This one I really am fascinated by. Is rack with an R
with a
interchangeable
W?
With W-R-A-C-K?
Oh, okay.
37% said yes. 63%, which is my camp, say no.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I'm really surprised that 37% said that was fine. Just given given all of the other words we've talked about and how they've what their attitudes have been.
Ross, what do you think?
I agree with you two. I'm a no.
Well, I went a little crazy with this though, and I'm finding that the R version is becoming more and more common.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's now standard.
Yeah.
Nerve racking with an R. And they're using rack as if you're on a torture rack. Mm-hmm. So you're being like, you know. Mm-hmm.
That's a good folk etymology. That's a good explanation for it, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
I think the problem, I don't either because I'm used to the WR. But I do think the problem is we're talking about sailing. I mean, rack comes
again.
From, you know, I mean, rack comes from like, you know, wrecked ship, you know, with the.
Oh, really?
In the Dutch.
Yeah, and it comes from, we were talking last week about the Dutch, and it comes from Dutch. Racke, Middle Dutch. But the key thing is, I mean, we're not like, you know, most of us aren't at sea filibustering or pirates or whatever. You know, we're on land and we're more used to different, you know, rack is a different word.
Right.
So I think that's what happens.
Yeah.
And I don't think we like picture rack anymore, you know, seaweed
because
no,
I say
rack or whatever. No.
Brain rack, racking my brain, I do it with a W. I mean, I know that rack and rack, the W one and the R one, are come from mm-hmm. different words, and that but they do overlap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I prefer rack with the W. I just do.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the mm-hmm. W better, and I'm also with. Well, I think Ross likes the W better too, but I'm also with what he said, which is that it is changing, and I think we just probably have to get over it.
Yeah. We cannot be racked with pain over this.
I am. It really, it bothers me. I'm sorry.
Although the one thing I do like about storm racked with the W, I mean, I just like picturing like, you know, a stormy sea. I like the word racked.
Yeah, I agree with it. Do you get those old, remember the starving artist ads they used to have? You get these
horrible
paintings
like a big waves
that were from motels.
Stuff.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
No, I like that image, actually. I do. I like the word because it evokes something in me. I love it.
This is why we have all those nautical terms. It's the romance of the sea.
Yes.
It is.
Aye.
Well, the sea's are.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.